This is Tuesday, July 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, D.C. Coming up, there could be some movement today on some plan to change the way Americans get their health care.
This is a major test of the Republican Party's ability to govern.
VOA's Michael Bowman is standing by with a story from Capitol Hill. Also, Israel changes its mind about metal detectors that have led to major confrontations with Palestinians. And driving in heavy traffic might be more dangerous to your health than you think. It's all on today's International Edition. The U.S. Senate is due to vote today on whether to open debate on the latest Republican initiative to overhaul the health care system put in place by former President Barack Obama. VOA's Michael Bowman is on Capitol Hill and joins us now. What's the scenario here, Michael?
Ira, this is a major test of the Republican Party's ability to govern. The party controls both houses of Congress. It controls the White House. And for 7 years, Republicans have been telling the American people, give us power and we will end Obamacare, former President Barack Obama's health care law. Well, they have that power, but so far they have been unable to make good on that promise. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill, but it is stuck in the Senate, where various votes were promised and then postponed and promised and postponed. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has promised a vote in just a few hours. We will see if that vote takes place, but it is highly doubtful that Republicans, even with their majority, are going to be able to get the 50 votes needed to begin debate. It's not impossible, and an awful lot rides on a few moderate senators who are worried that if you eliminate Obamacare, that some of their poor, elderly, and disabled constituents will be harmed.
Now, this vote today isn't really a vote on a medical plan. Is that correct? It's just a procedural vote?
Indeed. In fact, what Democrats are pointing out is that there is this extremely consequential vote coming up, but Republicans haven't said what exactly people are going to be voting on. There is a thought that Republicans might simply repeal Obamacare with no replacement plan in place and take up a replacement plan later, or they could try to do it all at once. And if they do include a replacement plan, there are various proposals floating around. So it's unclear exactly what senators are voting for, except to begin debate, in other words, to begin the floor process that could yield a final vote on a final bill at some future date.
Now, Senator John McCain, who the sad story is, was diagnosed with brain cancer a few days ago or last week, is going to be there today, right?
That is our understanding, Ira. Senator McCain, who got a devastating diagnosis of a particularly lethal form of brain cancer, apparently was seen hiking in the Arizona desert with his kids just a few days ago and is making a return to Washington. I have spent many, many occasions speaking with Senator McCain in the hallway. This is a man of intense spirit who has always clapped me on the shoulder and given me a wink and has always been a very engaging person and certainly not one of the shrinking flowers, if there are any, to be found in the Capitol. Senator McCain is definitely not one of them. He is probably going to vote yes on the health care repeal bill, but I suspect that his larger goal is to send a message that even with this diagnosis, he is not done for and that he still will continue his duties. I should point out that former Democratic Senator Edward Kennedy received the same diagnosis in 2008, yet was able to continue serving as the senator from Massachusetts for almost a year thereafter.
Well, we all have our fingers crossed and our hopes for John McCain's health. Michael, the Senate Judiciary Committee has come out with a subpoena. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yes, Ira, 24 hours after the Senate Intelligence Committee heard from Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, in a closed private setting, the Judiciary Committee now wants to hear from President Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort. Now, this is someone who is believed to have had many business dealings with Russia. This is someone who is an experienced campaign hand. And while it could be excused or it could be explained that some of the dealings that have occurred with Russia in terms of the Trump campaign that might have been done by inexperienced people such as Donald Trump Jr. or Jared Kushner, that when it comes to Paul Manafort, this is someone who absolutely knows the law, absolutely knows the bounds of ethics as an experienced campaign hand. If indeed there was anything nefarious going on, he should have known better. And even if there wasn't anything nefarious going on, he should have known that there could be an appearance of impropriety in any dealings that he may have had or that he may have been a party to or that he may have condoned. Let me state that nothing has been proved. We don't know if, in fact, Paul Manafort has done anything wrong whatsoever regarding this Russia investigation, but he is definitely a person of interest, and there had been an agreement between both Donald Trump Jr. and Paul Manafort that they would cooperate with the Judiciary Committee in providing information. However, apparently, the committee hit a brick wall in terms of acquiring that information from Paul Manafort, and they do have the ability, they do have the power to subpoena and to coerce people to appear in public in front of the committee, and that is what they have done.
Well, it looks like you have somewhat of a busy day ahead of you, and we thank you for spending some time with us.
Always a pleasure, Ira.
Michael Bowman, Capitol Hill reporter covering the Senate for VOA. Well, let us move on now to Andrew Palczewski, who covers social media for us here on VOA, on International Edition. Healthcare, you know, we kind of wonder here at VOA how much of interest that is to our worldwide audience, because it doesn't really concern them all that much. Are we just talking to expatriates or whatever? I have no idea. But I think Michael pointed out that it is a sign of the division in the U.S. political world, the political scenario.
And if you need a further sign of that division, turn to what else? Social media, because we're seeing a lot of advocacy both for and against this vote today. Hashtag Save ACA, the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Lots of people telling their stories about what would happen if they lose their health care under this new plan. And lots of other people talking about how this Obamacare plan has hurt them, especially people who have small businesses or say that their premiums have gone up. So a lot of back and forth on social media on this healthcare bill. And it does speak to the divisions, as we often see on social media. This is just one of those kind of flashpoint moments in the timeline where those divisions are boiling up.
And President Trump has said over and over and over again that it is time to do away with, and he has called it every negative thing he could possibly say about Obamacare, the healthcare brought on by his predecessor. But Trump hasn't really come out with a plan of his own. And I think he's relying on other people. Anybody talking about that or no?
Well, that's one of the frustrations that you see even from Republicans, that there seems to be some lack of cohesion in terms of the message that President Trump will go out and say, just repeal it or just replace it, just do it. And congressional Republicans say, well, it's not quite that easy. It's a lot of mechanics. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes chess that goes on. So there is some frustration on that. But I think as far as the ultimate goal, there's pretty universal agreement that they want to repeal this and hopefully replace it with something else.
Well, let's keep talking about the President of the United States. As we talked about yesterday, that's pretty much all we hear in the news these days domestically. But he went and talked to the Boy Scouts yesterday, didn't he?
Yes, the Boy Scout National Jamboree out in West Virginia. It's tradition for the President to be invited and come speak to the Scouts there. But hashtag Boy Scout speech is trending even today, a day after the speech, because it was a very unusual speech. Started out on the teleprompter, and as we've often seen, President Trump strayed from the script, started talking about politics, started talking about Hillary Clinton, started talking about one instance of a cocktail party where he was hanging out with somebody.
Now, most of his audience was like teenage kids, right?
Yeah, I would say probably about 14, 15, 16-year-old kids. The interesting thing, a lot of people noting that many of the scouts in attendance seemed to be in agreement with Trump. It seemed to be supporting his positions.
Or being courteous.
Right. One of the 12 scout laws. The Boy Scouts releasing a statement on social media saying that they don't endorse one position, product, political candidate, philosophy, that it's just tradition to invite the president. But some interesting stagecraft kind of going on while the president was talking, because he invited Energy Secretary Rick Perry, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke. Both of them are Eagle Scouts, which is the highest level that you can attain in scouting. There was one famous Eagle Scout from Trump's cabinet that he did not bring, and that is Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Gee, I wonder why that is.
So very interesting. A lot of people looking to that and saying, well, if you needed any more evidence, if the tweets weren't enough that he's not happy with Jeff Sessions, the fact that he did not bring him to the Scout Jamboree, well, he brought other two Eagle Scouts from his cabinet, speaks volumes.
Well, he also, I don't know whether he invited, but the Secretary of State, who was also, I think he said he was a national scout leader, wasn't there. Whether he was invited or not, and whether he was invited and couldn't come, we don't really know as yet.
Yeah,
We haven't investigated that,
but just the fact that Jeff Sessions wasn't there, a lot of people said further reinforces these tweets and these negative comments that have come out against him over the past few days from the president.
And they seem to be more and more intensive, these tweets from the president against Jeff Sessions, who was one of his first major supporters. What are people saying there?
It's a lot of surprise that this is going on, and there's a lot of intrigue about what exactly is going on behind the scenes, if Jeff Sessions could be fired. There was a breaking news moment yesterday on social media when Jeff Sessions was spotted at the White House, and everyone said, oh, that means he's going to be fired by the president today. Well, that didn't happen. But social media is keeping the pulse on this, and they're keeping the pulse on some of the people that could replace Jeff Sessions, including former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani. Giuliani has come out and said that he thinks Sessions is doing a great job. He doesn't want to replace him. So very interesting stuff. And as I said, social media is keeping tabs on all of it.
And Andrew Palczewski is keeping tabs on social media. And he'd like to hear from you.
You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
Andrew, I thank you for being with us here on International Edition. Among the top stories, Jared Kushner, U.S. President Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, faced questions in a closed-door interview Tuesday with the House Intelligence Committee, part of its probe into Russian meddling in last year's election. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions' ally says President Trump is carrying out a deliberate public campaign to pressure him to quit rather than fire him outright. But the country's top lawyer, they say, has no intention of resigning. The U.S. House of Representatives is likely to approve new sanctions today against Russia for its meddling in last year's presidential election. A U.S. Navy ship patrolling in the Persian Gulf fired warning shots at an Iranian Revolutionary Guard ship after it got too close to the vessel. And Israel has removed metal detectors from a holy site in Jerusalem. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study suggests that people who travel to and from work in heavy traffic are being exposed to more harmful pollution than had been thought. The study is said to be the first to measure air pollution from inside of vehicles rather than relying on data gathered by roadside sensors. Researchers from several southern U.S. universities gathered air samples from sensors attached to the passenger seats inside cars that commuted into downtown Atlanta during morning rush hour. The researchers say that the devices picked up twice the amount of particulate matter than the roadside sensors. They also found the air samples contained twice the amount of chemicals that are known to cause oxidative stress, which scientists think is linked to a number of diseases such as cancer, respiratory and heart disease, and some forms of neurodegenerative diseases. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition, and we continue now. The U.S. House of Representatives is likely to approve new sanctions today against Russia for its meddling in last year's presidential election, at the same time giving Congress new powers to review any attempt by President Trump to ease penalties imposed on Moscow. Senate has already overwhelmingly approved its version of the legislation. In both chambers, lawmakers are calling for a 30-day period to vote on any Trump move to curtail sanctions on Russia, such as former President Barack Obama's closure of two Russian compounds in the U.S. in response to the election interference. Trump has objected to the provision keeping him from taking unilateral action on easing the Russian sanctions as he attempts to foster a friendly relationship with President Vladimir Putin. Israel is back down on a confrontation over a disputed Jerusalem holy place that is sacred to Muslims and Jews, but tensions remain high. Robert Berger has more on the story for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel has dismantled metal detectors that sparked Palestinian riots at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem's Old City, the site Jews call the Temple Mount. The devices were installed after Arab gunmen killed two Israeli policemen at the compound nearly 2 weeks ago. The Palestinians were furious about the metal detectors, accusing Israel of violating freedom of worship and trying to seize control of the third holiest place in Islam. They refused to pass through the detectors, raising tensions as they held prayers on the streets. The United States intervened, and Ambassador David Friedman mediated a deal between Israel and Jordan, which is the custodian of the Al-Aqsa Mosque.
It's important sometimes to get out ahead of things, so I think we did. With no fanfare, but a lot of hard work and behind-the-scenes discussions, we were able to defuse the situation very quickly.
The situation, however, has not been defused. Muslim officials are unhappy the detectors have been replaced by high-tech cameras and have urged Palestinians to stay away from the mosque. Palestinian official Nabil Shath said the situation must return to the status quo that existed before the crisis began. He said cameras and any new security measures humiliate Muslims and are unacceptable. Israeli Cabinet Minister Yuval Steinitz said the Palestinian Authority does not want a restoration of calm. He said Israel made a significant concession, but the Palestinians are trying to incite a religious war between Muslims and Jews. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
Checking some other news that's going on around the world, Syrian government warplanes broke a ceasefire agreement Monday for the second consecutive day with airstrikes on districts in rebel-held eastern Ghouta near the country's capital of Damascus, according to political activists. According to the British-based monitoring group, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a bombing raid Monday on the town of Arbian left 8 civilians dead and at least 30 wounded. The Syrian military said it launched the bombing runs because of a breach of the ceasefire by Jaish al-Islam, an armed opposition group. I had this story about former U.S. football players. Research on 202 former U.S. football players found evidence of a brain disease in nearly all of them, from athletes in the National Football League down to high school. This is the biggest update on chronic traumatic injury, or CTE. The disease has been linked with repeated head blows, and the results confirm that it can happen even in young players. But the report only reflects high occurrence in samples at a Boston brain bank, and many donors contributed because of troubling symptoms before their death. CTE was diagnosed in 177 former players and nearly 90% of the brains that had been studied. The parents of the critically ill British infant Charlie Gard dropped their legal bid yesterday to send him to the United States for experimental treatment after a new medical test showed such treatment could no longer help. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo reports on the heart-wrenching story of baby Charlie that attracted worldwide attention and sympathy.
Justice for Charlie! Justice for Charlie!
Connie Yates and Chris Gard spoke with emotion following their decision to withdraw their appeal before a London High Court hearing.
As Charlie's devoted and loving parents, we have decided that it's no longer in Charlie's best interests to pursue treatment, and we will let our son go and be with the angels.
Save Charlie Gard! Guard and Yates say they reached that decision because MRI scans showed that 11-month-old baby Charlie had irreversible muscular damage and after seeing the latest brain scans. They maintain their beloved son could have been saved.
A whole lot of time has been wasted. We are now in July, and our poor boy has been left to just lie in hospital for months without any treatment whilst lengthy court battles have been fought.
Charlie has a rare genetic condition called mitochondrial DNA depletion syndrome. Via Skype, Dr. Art Kaplan, head of medical ethics at the New York University School of Medicine.
Charlie just has too much brain damage, blind, deaf, paralyzed, can't breathe. If you're going to try experimentation, you usually have to try it before all that damage takes place.
Kaplan says he's not surprised the parents reached this decision to let their baby go.
Some people have worried that they're going to try and euthanize this baby. What they'll do is they'll start to give him pain support, anything that might be causing him to suffer because of difficulties in breathing. It's called palliation.
Save Charlie, God!
Baby Charlie's case, which pitted his parents' wishes against the views of the doctors treating him, attracted international attention. The legal battle lasted months, generating sympathy and support for the parents from many around the world, including Pope Francis and U.S. President Donald Trump. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
And that is going to wrap up our program for today. From Washington, D.C., you've been listening to International Edition. Please find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to Director Patrice Martin, our engineer John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned over the recent violations of the ceasefire in the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, which have resulted in multiple reported civilian and military casualties, including a young child. In a statement issued July 6th, the State Department called on both sides to cease military action and return to the negotiation table. In their statement released July 5th, the co-chairs of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe Minsk Group called upon the parties to cease military action as violence only begets further violence and accomplishes nothing. The co-chairs called upon the sides to return to the negotiation table in good faith. In an earlier June 19th statement, the co-chairs underscored that such negotiations are the only way to bring a lasting peace to the people of the region, who expect and deserve progress toward settlement of the conflict. Stefan Dujarric, the United Nations spokesman for the Secretary General, stated on July 6th that the UN also shares the concerns of the OSCE Minsk Group co-chairs over recent ceasefire regime violations. We, the UN, call upon the sides to refrain from any military action and strongly urge them to take immediate steps to de-escalate tensions and prevent further violence. An early return to the negotiation table in good faith is the only way to resolve this long-standing and dangerous conflict, Mr. Dujarric said. For its part, the United States continues to engage intensely with the sides. The long-standing policy of the United States, shared by the Minsk Group co-chairs, is that a just settlement must be based on international law, which includes the Helsinki Final Act, in particular, the principles of the non-use of force or threat of force, territorial integrity, and equal rights and self-determination of peoples.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.